All right, everybody. Hello, how are you? Thank you for tuning in once more to another episode of Pseudo Intellectual Live. If it's your first time here, just a reminder, we do these live streams every single Wednesday at 11:30 a.m. Central. You can also find us wherever you find your podcast. So be sure to like, listen, subscribe, all of the good stuff. Today, we have a super exciting guest. This is someone who I've been subscribed to for years. The first video of his I ever saw was actually a really, really in-depth breakdown, I think, of some lore behind Aliens and Predators, those films. It was great, and I've been subscribed to him ever since, so please welcome. He's a commentator, he is a reviewer, Nate, who also goes by Mr. H Reviews. You can find all of his links down below. Be sure to follow him. Nate, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. Good to be here. Good to chit-chat.
Yeah. Yeah, and I actually, speaking of, I was doing another deep dive into your channel leading up to this to kind of see what you've been focusing on in terms of your coverage, and it brought memories of, yeah, that first video of yours I ever saw. It was really, really long, and it was just, I was binging, I was going through a rabbit hole of, like, I think I just seen Alien Prometheus or something like that, and I wanted to know more about it, and that was still one of the best videos on the subject that I've ever seen, so hats off to you for that.
Oh, thank you. We've got Alien Romulus coming up now, so I'm sort of
rekindling
those vibes again. It's good times.
Right. Well, I mean, you cover a lot of different entertainment stuff on your YouTube channel. We were just talking about this before we went live on your X account. You're starting to delve into some politics. So that's my wheelhouse exactly. I love talking about all those things. I thought it might be interesting for us to sort of start off talking a little bit about what's going on with Disney. People who have seen this channel before might know I used to consider myself a Disney adult. I was way too into Disney, including the theme parks. I now find myself, though, essentially trying to boycott a lot of what they do, which is really sad and something I never thought would happen. But when I look at the messaging that they're increasingly pushing, and honestly, politics aside, just the overall quality of what they're pushing out, whether that's the Disney Plus series or even the latest films, I'm just not interested in shilling for this company anymore. You've done a lot of, I guess, exploration into what's going on behind the scenes at Disney in terms of board members and things like that. Would you mind walking us through a little bit about what's going on with Disney leadership? Because we've seen that there's been failure after failure. I mean, Indiana Jones 5, the Star Wars is not being well received. It seems like the message should be clear by now. Okay, the audience is not interested in all this DEI wokeness, but it doesn't seem like Disney is stopping that. Why isn't the leadership doing something about this?
In terms of leadership, you've got Bob Iger, obviously, the Disney CEO, and then a whole host of board members who, a proper board holds the CEO accountable, but when everyone on the board is appointed by the CEO and they're chums with the CEO, then they're not, they don't work on that level. They don't hold the CEO accountable. And so you've got failure after failure, which has just consistently happened more and more. And then a developing situation, which has kind of come to fruition already now, as per Reuters reports anyway, is that you did have a proxy fight, which was with Nelson Peltz, trying to get on the board, basically trying to get board seats with Trian Fund Management and Ike Perlmutter. It's a difficult situation to really talk about, because if you look at any actual business model, a lot of the leadership shouldn't be there, right? Like, obviously, you know, actual business models wouldn't have, you wouldn't consistently have Kathleen Kennedy, for instance, still in
right.
power.
I mean, it seems like when it comes to Kathleen Kennedy, that, and honestly, a lot of the people who are making decisions at Disney, it doesn't look like they're making decisions based on this is how we can best serve our shareholders and give them a financial return. That doesn't seem to be a consideration at all, honestly.
So I covered this on my show. Lucasfilm, I think, takes the record of a movie studio that has now actually, actively, no word of a lie, no stretch, no over-exaggeration, destroyed every single IP it owns, right? It released Willow, a series on Disney Plus, cancelled it because it had got terrible viewership and, you know, no one was really interested in it. That would have cost quite a lot of money. And then you've got Star Wars, arguably what should have been one of the, and was for a while, and should still be the biggest IPs in the world, now completely dead. No one's interested in it. And then you've got the likes of Indiana Jones, which, if done right, Indiana Jones 5, for instance, would have been, again, not really an exaggeration, because of, you know, this sort of hype that Harrison Ford is going to, you know, risen to. That could have been a $1 billion movie, but now it's lost somewhere in the region of like $300 million. Lucasfilm as an entity, as a physical entity, is just a dead weight. It serves nothing but to lose money for Disney. And yet Kathleen Kennedy is still in power. Why?
Why?
Like, from a business perspective, you'd be like, on your bike, sling your hook, you're done. We're not going to pay you, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars a year to preside over this dead weight. This is not good. It's just,
no, it's crazy. Insanity. I'm not someone who, even I employ people, I'm not someone who like, oh, you made this one mistake, you're gone. I've never been a type of person like that. I'm like, you know, mistakes happen, let's work through them. I feel though, if you lose hundreds of millions of dollars for your company, like, that's fair, right? That's fair that you should probably not work there anymore. I don't think that's being, I mean, too strict. I think that's a pretty reasonable standard. Whoa. Ideally, you make us money, even if you are going to lose us a little bit of money, hopefully not hundreds of millions of dollars, like the GDP of some small countries.
Yeah, quite literally. I mean, it's, yeah, I don't really understand it. I don't, Disney as a whole, again, you look at it from a business perspective, it doesn't really make any sense. I do think ultimately you look at the main backers of Disney, though, and the likes of Vanguard and BlackRock, and it becomes very difficult not to notice the pattern of events of everything that they put their, you know, fingers in, the pies that they have their fingers in. And it is, you know, we talk about it, the agenda, the message, it has to be that. It is what it is. And they seem to be intent, you know, on doing it at all costs. And they have also openly admitted to trying to, I guess, sort of influence social change among the populace as well. And that's very, very apparent, actually, when you, you know, you yourself have said their content. It's very, very apparent that there is a clear sort of social driver there to change stuff and be very subversive with it as well. And I find it's quite nefarious. And you, like yourself, there's many others that have now just completely switched off from it. Just nope, not interested now. They'll watch the old content because the old content was good. This is the thing. Disney rose to prevalence because it was good. It wasn't not good. Like, it was actually good. But then it's everything Bob Iger's done. So Bob Iger, you know, he made some fantastic deals, and he did make some fantastic deals. He bought Lucasfilm, right? For Disney. That's a huge get for Disney.
Right.
In an effort to diversify their offerings. So Disney was relatively known as a female brand, you know, not too much of a stretch. And so they were trying to get lads on board. They're trying to get, you know, boys, basically trying to appeal more to boys. And the same thing happened with Marvel. Marvel was supposed to be a brand which was purchased for boys. It was, you know, let's get the lads in. And then they've got these brands which their sole purpose was purchased to appeal to boys and men. And then they've just, like, gynification of them. They've just flipped it upside down into this, you know, a vehicle to appeal to women again. You had the female audience, Disney. You had that. The idea was to appeal to men here. It's so bizarre. And again, it comes down to their primary shareholders, Vanguard and BlackRock, and the whole DEI and ESG to a lesser extent, but still part of it for sure, because it influences the artistic sort of driving factors of media. So yeah, it's crazy. There's no other way to put it. It's just crazy.
That is a good way to look at it. I hadn't considered that before, how the acquisitions Iger made. When you're looking at Lucasfilm, Marvel, those are more male-centric, but under Disney's leadership, they've put females to the forefront of that, especially now. I don't think it was necessarily the case the early days of the MCU, but right now all in on basically the female hero subverting the straight white male character trope. I mean, I have heard it argued by people who are in favor of these, you know, modern reimaginings that actually this is good for business because, you know, Marvel, Indiana Jones, they don't necessarily need to only be considered male franchises. They could appeal more to everybody if you just put more women in them. But I feel like that ignores the fact that women tend to just have different preferences, and you can't just slap a woman, you know, in NASCAR and expect women to just now be fans of NASCAR. Like, these are intrinsically different franchises, interests, and that's okay. And that's okay.
Well, the funny thing is actually there is a crossover between things which men and women both like, but it's also incredibly stupid to just try to do what they've done and push everything out just for women. Because if you look at the majority of the movie going audience, it is predominantly men that go to watch movies, right? We have this information available to us. It is men that primarily go to watch movies. So if you don't appeal to that audience, you are risking disenfranchising your primary demographic, which is a man or boys, whatever. But they are the primary moviegoers. And what we've seen time and time again, actually, which I find hilarious, is any of these movies which have sort of been built specifically to appeal to women, all around that as a primary focus, they're marketed as that as well. So two ones which come to mind instantly would be Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. Awful film. Don't watch it if you haven't. And then also The Marvels. Mediocre film. Still not worth your time. Don't watch it. Both of these films were marketed very much women, 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 women. And they failed. And they didn't fail because men... But they didn't fail because men chose not to go watch them and things like that. And it was just, you know, women that... It was just a small demographic of women that went to watch them. No, the small amount of success and relative box office that they accrued was actually all down to men. We have the demographic breakdowns, and it was majority men that went to watch both of those movies. It was actually women that didn't go out and support the films because women aren't interested in that. Funnily enough, and maybe you'll agree, you know, is that women actually do quite like watching men. And they quite enjoy watching the stuff which men also quite like watching as well. There seems to be a crossover. Women are far smarter than studios try to make out. They're well aware when they're being pandered to on a purely simplistic level. So, you know, they're like, no, I don't quite feel this movie that's supposed to pander to me. No, I'm not interested. And women enjoy watching. Again, you can confirm or deny. But women enjoy watching strong men. You know, women don't tend to appreciate when a man is denigrated for the benefit of a woman. They don't find that massively appealing. So it's just, it's bizarre. This drive to appeal to women pushes out the main demographic, who still goes to watch them, just in far, far fewer numbers. But they don't ever get the female audience. There was one film which miraculously did it, which was Barbie, but outside of that there's not many female focused films which is just marketed for women that becomes a success.
Well, I feel like there used to be, especially in the 2000s, there was this huge kind of rom-com and comedy wave that we were seeing in films that a lot of women were interested in, but I feel like the international market has kind of killed that genre because comedy does not really translate well across cultures, definitely not to the Asian market. And it's a similar thing with rom-coms. Those are the types of movies that women like. And I think if I think of someone like my mother, who is the quintessential just kind of normie female moviegoer, love my mom, but she's interested in those types of, like, she dragged us to see the Downton Abbey movie, at least the first one. She loved that. But if she is going to see a superhero movie, she wants to go see a good superhero movie, not a bad superhero movie that is taking the worst aspects of all the genres in an attempt to appeal to, frankly, a demographic that does not exist. Like, that no one wants to see, like, rom-com superhero movie. You're trying to appeal to everybody, but you're not appealing to anybody. And I feel like, you know, I can appreciate the attempts to try and bring in this young female audience to the superhero genre through female superheroes. But I feel like by now we should know that this is not working. So I don't know how many times Disney is going to keep trying this. Or, you know, it was a similar thing with Indiana Jones trying to give the new face of the franchise to Phoebe Waller-Bridge for some reason. Obviously didn't work. But I feel like if a studio was interested in making money, they would have pivoted by now. And for people who are not familiar, Nelson Peltz, he's been called an activist investor. I would say that the people at Disney are more the activists, and he's just an investor who actually wants a return on his money, which I think is reasonable. But that, I think, is why there's this war going on behind the scenes. And I honestly, for the good of the company and the legacy that they have, I hope sound minds went out, because if you look at what they're turning out, did you see Wish?
No.
It wasn't
high on my agenda.
It's not good. It's basically as if an AI wrote a script and they just threw over $100 million at it. It's terrible. It's lacking any artistic merit. It's essentially a movie written by committee. Like, marketing people would have thought, oh, what can we kind of throw in that would be a nod to Disney of the past? So they have, you know, seven friends and seven dwarves, and they're trying to conjure up the wish scene that we used to see with like Sleeping Beauty and stuff like that. The only thing missing that old Disney used to have, though, is quality, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing as a whole, right? So Amazon, pivoting slightly, but it's important because it's relative to the whole industry. Amazon released, and you can Google this, you can check it out yourself. Amazon released their DEI playbook, literally what they call it, their DEI playbook. And Amazon is just an example of the entire industry, because the entire industry does this. Is that they have prerequisites. I mean, it's just sanctioned racism. It's just sanctioned sexism. And all it is, you know, we must hire this. We must have this. We must, you know, have these certain demographics, whether that be in front of the camera or behind the camera. Amazon's was quite interesting because they even went so far as to have, vendors, a vendor list, approved vendor list. Is it owned by a black person? Are they a woman? We'll discriminate positively towards them. Like, what? Can you imagine being like, you know, on a movie set, and you're like, oh, I've got to call up the people that make the sandwiches and figure out if they're owned by a black woman or not. It's just absolute lunacy. It's absurd. But this is the industry at large. So the Oscars, for instance, largely irrelevant, you know, show in this day and age. But the show itself, they have their own prerequisites, and it's the same thing, DEI. And this is across the board. It's everything, all of it across the board. It's exactly the same thing. Now, you know, what comes first, who knows, but it all comes down to money. And this is something which BlackRock loves. BlackRock loves to fund this stuff. So this is just, you know, again, it's follow the money at the end of the day. You know, because certainly Disney's not making the money, you know, in terms of box office receipts. So they're getting the funding from somewhere, and that's their investors, BlackRock, Vanguard. But it's a sad state of affairs, because, you know, diversity as a concept in terms of artistic endeavors works, but wait, not in the modern sense. It works in a diversity through programming, right? So one of the best things on TV at the moment is Shogun, right?
Right.
Great story set in feudal Japan. Fantastic. Fantastic sets, locations, great color grading, beautifully shot. So attention to detail, so fantastic that they even have Japanese dialect specific to the time of feudal Japan. If you were to say that now, you'd be laughed at. Great stuff. No black people, right? Quite rightly so. They were not around in those times. That is diversity through programming. When they're just allowed to crack on and do it as they are, you get a great product. And it's also interesting. It tells you, something historically relevant. I can watch that and I can know what I'm watching does actually have some an echo of the historical accuracy through it. If I put something on Netflix, I'm going to watch Black Vikings, right? Like, that's nonsense. And this is what, you know, modern day youngsters are getting their sort of history lessons from. And it's absurd. It's lunacy. We have homogenous, we have diversity through casting, which creates homogenous shows, because we all know the archetypes that we're going to get. Strong female, one of them is going to be gay. There's going to be an annoying white guy that's either going to be the villain or is going to be a cucked gay guy. It's going to be one of the two. We know exactly what we're going to be getting. Whereas if you had diversity through programming, a la Shogun, and I don't know, some, they funded some African stories and we had myths and legends from Africa, that'd be interesting. I'd be interested in that. We get a wealth of great shows, not bogged down by this absolute lunacy and nonsense that we have today.
And it's frustrating looking at Shogun, because I know in today's age, there's never going to be a European equivalent of that, of a just well-written period piece, because in the past that might have been something like Vikings, but then we see the modern iteation of that. You literally have black female Jarls, which, I mean, just frankly didn't happen. And I feel like the only reason in a way that Shogun is allowed to exist as it does is because it's focused on an Asian culture, which I don't have a problem with. I think it's great, but I just don't want to see, now we can tell all these other stories, but we can't tell authentically European ones, because that concept is racist. So we have Black Anne Boleyn, which is too bad.
Oh, I couldn't believe that. That's just, yeah, that was shocking. Yeah. That was absolutely shocking. But you're right. You are right that the sort of westernized stories they're always told through a prism of black and white. Mm-hmm. So diversity only works in those ways in the Western world. It is literally a black and white, and sort of, you know, what you do with your, you know, your junk behind the scenes, who you enjoy having fun with. That's the diverse lens that we tell in the West, as opposed to, you know, a broader stories and wider narratives. It's just that. It's just so, it creates a level of artistic impotence, right? Everything's just the same. It's boring. You know, literally know what's going to come out. And you go, oh, of course they're casting her. Of course that's that character. Oh, of course they're doing a race swap. It's so boring. So, so boring.
Well, and actually on that note, I do want to talk about the latest Romeo and Juliet casting that's been released. Yeah. And let's bring in a discussion of the male gaze and Sydney Sweeney a little bit. But first, I do want to say a big thank you to today's sponsor, Beam. You guys know that I have a toddler and sleep can be a little bit hard to come by sometimes, but that is exactly why I am so in love with Beam. And by the way, if you're not familiar with it, essentially what Beam is a hot cocoa that helps you get the best night's sleep possible. So it's basically amazing on all fronts. So right now, my listeners can get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their science-backed healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Better sleep has never tasted better. You can actually choose different flavors, like, here we go, chocolate peanut butter. I haven't tried that one yet, but we have tried the cinnamon cocoa and the sea salt caramel. They are delicious and they only have 15 calories and 0 grams of sugar. So not only is this like a little treat, but you can also indulge without feeling guilty about it. And other sleep aids can cause next day grogginess, which I really hate, because it's like you're trying to get a better sleep, but if you wake up feeling like a zombie, it's defeated the purpose. But Dream does not have that problem. It contains a powerful all natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, melatonin, and nano CBD to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. The numbers don't lie. In a clinical study, 93% of participants reported that Dream actually helped them get a better sleep, which is awesome. So if you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/Lauren and use the code Lauren at checkout. Again, that is shopbeam.com/Lauren and use the code Lauren for up to 40% off. It's so great. My husband actually uses it as well every night too. And it's just, it's a way that you can not only easily incorporate a sleep aid into your nighttime routine, but again, it's also a little treat. And I am pro little treat culture. So a huge thank you to Beam for sponsoring this video. All right, so let's talk about the Romeo and Juliet casting that I don't really think anybody was asking for. Let me try to pull this up here, but this is actually for a play, as you mentioned before we went live. So this isn't for a movie or anything like that, but here we go. New Romeo and Juliet in London's West End revival. We have Tom Holland and we have, I'm sorry, I forget this actress's name. What are your thoughts here?
Well, that, so there's a better photo where she legitimately looks like a man, right? So a lot of people are saying, oh, hey, you know, everyone hates this because of, you know, racism. Look, Shakespeare was of his time, you know, Shakespearean literature. Yes, it's been swapped here and there. It's still worthwhile noting that, yes, it is just another example of a race swap for sure. But primarily, I think the main focus is on the fact that she's very, very ugly, very, very unattractive.
Right.
Now, obviously, I'm aware that's subjective. And to sort of get into the nitty gritty of it, it's important to note that, you know, no one can really help what they look like. And that's fine. This is not a damnation on her specifically. But it's, there you go. No.
This one?
With a cornrows. Yeah, there you go. That just looks like a bloke. So anyway, the point is, again, you can't help what you look like. But this is another example of a concerted effort and a concerted push as an attack on beauty, female beauty standards, and male beauty, you know, male beauty standards as well. We've seen it time and time again, and it's just this now huge push. Like I estimate it probably been the last 10 years we've seen a very concerted effort to sort of bring down beauty standards for unbeknownst reasons. It's just this sort of uglification of Hollywood in general.
It's, you know, I think back to people like Michelle Pfeiffer, Angelina Jolie, some of the most beautiful women you can imagine. And there was, you know, at the time people were saying, well, hang on, this is unrepresentative. This is causing depression amongst women. It's too unattainable. You know, I think there's something to be said for, frankly, the aspirational aspect of a lot of these pieces and a lot of these women. You don't always have to look for relatability in your media. There's nothing wrong with it. And sometimes that is what you want, but it shouldn't only be what you're looking for. But I feel like we can't even have aspirational people or projects nowadays because we all want to be pandered to. So it's almost offensive to have someone who's that much better looking than the average person. And this actually, I think it ties into why Sydney Sweeney is such a huge deal nowadays, because I mean, she is, I think, one of the few young actresses who is that bombshell archetype. I'm trying to think of other young actresses who kind of exist in the same realm as her. I'm coming up short. I don't know about you.
But no, there's not many. There's not many. There's not many. Not many actresses which would sort of that has played up the beauty standards as much as she has. So that's also important to note is that, you know, you can be attractive, but she has traditional femininity, right? Mm-hmm. Curves, bust, looks great, but also plays it up, you know, like actually, you know, we'll indulge in it. There's the whole SNL Hooters sketches and stuff like this. It's crazy to me, and I like it, of course, I'm a bloke, but it's crazy to me that she's managed to slip through the cracks of Hollywood, because there's very few that there is just an attack on beauty standards. There is that we're just lowering it all. And who wants to sit and watch ugly people at the end of the day? You know, well, it's just isn't it? At the end of the day, who wants to sit and watch ugly people? I don't want to watch ugly people. You know, if I'm watching this series, I want to watch attractive people, right? I don't want to watch someone that looks like, you know, like an ogre for goodness sake. And also, the thing about this is, Romeo and Juliet's a really good example of that. is Romeo and Juliet is a story about, you know, a man basically risking his entire, you know, it's two families risking their entire being for this true love. And yes, true love doesn't, you know, necessarily cross over with attractiveness. Of course not. But it has to be believable at the end of the day. Right.
Right.
You still have to pair people up on a believable scale. And isn't it funny how, especially Romeo and Juliet, for instance, I mean, it mirrors modern day dating. You've got, you know, a woman punching up, right? You've got a woman punching up there because modern day dating standards are that, well, you know, it doesn't cross over massively with modern day dating, but, you know, women get an easy lay. So that they think that that's my standard because a man has, you know, gone sort of crossed down to their level, I guess, if you're doing it on the scale rating. And so I don't know, it's absurd, but it only goes one way.
Definitely hyperinflation of female worth or sense of value in the dating market. And actually getting to the believability of it all, I'm not sure if you're at all familiar with Handmaid's Tale, the series, but my husband and I, we watched the first season together and he didn't really make it past the first season. One of the reasons is that, I don't know if you're familiar with the actress who plays the main character. Got the hook nose, right. So yeah. I think she's a great actress. She's very talented, but she's not necessarily, I think, conventionally feminine looking. In the series, spoiler alert, I guess, she's paired up in a home with a husband and a wife, and she's supposed to be their handmaiden. And so what happens is that the husband ends up kind of falling in love with June, hook nose lady, over his wife. And I don't know if you know Yvonne Strahovski, I think is her name. She is a total bombshell. So let me just see if I can look her up. So June and Serena, Handmaid's Tale. But we're supposed to essentially believe as the audience, and obviously attraction isn't just about looks, but here we go. Share this tab.
For sure. Absolutely helps, for sure.
Here, so on the left, we have June, the main character, and then on the right, we have this man's wife, and he's essentially having an affair with the left person, and he's married to the right person, and it's like, okay, well, is that super believable? And it was actually so unbelievable for my husband that he stopped watching it.
Did he have a brain aneurysm in the show, or not?
No, this is just what we're supposed to buy. It's like, come on. Okay. Like there needs to be like some realm of believability. If I'm watching a show, you guys are going to need to do the acting, not me. It should not be like on me to act as if like, oh yeah, I could totally see.
But you know, the outrage,
appeal there.
You know, the outrage that would go down if it was in reverse, right? If it was an incredibly ugly man, you know, paired with a super hot woman, the outrage that would be from, people would be insane, but it only ever works on that basis, it seems.
Right, because when we look at male superheroes, we still have Chris Hemsworth as Thor. He's super in shape. We don't have the simultaneous body positivity movement on the male side. You know, they're all still expected to have super low percent body fat and all that. No, there's a double standard for sure. And even, you know, you mentioned Sydney Sweeney. She's managed to kind of slip through the cracks. She's now actually been accused of embracing the male gaze. For being quintessentially feminine and attractive. So, I mean, who knows how long she's going to be getting roles, I suppose, if she is being attacked in this way. I don't know how much of an ideological commitment casting directors have to casting less attractive, less feminine looking people.
Well, so you know, it's important to note you obviously do need to act as well, right? But
right.
The concerted effort in all media has unequivocally been to have people significantly more unattractive. It's everywhere. You look at it on adverts, you know, there's fat people everywhere. You know, if you find that attractive, you find that attractive, but it's not traditional beauty standards. It's also not healthy and it's not good for you. So you can dispute attractiveness, but you can't dispute that. And so you obviously have to have talent for sure. And there has been this concerted effort to drain it down. With Sydney Sweeney, I doubt will be affected by this. And, you know, good on her for embracing the male gaze anyway, because she knows her audience, right? There's nothing wrong with embracing the male gaze when that is predominantly, as I said before, the majority of moviegoers. They are men. They like to look at things. You know, we all like to look at attractive people. As an actress, she's not massively great as an actress. She's fine. She's mediocre at best. But most actors are kind of mediocre at best these days. But she's done a very smart thing where she's established her own production company now, and she started to produce the films that she stars in. So one of the films which everyone is screaming about, which isn't particularly great, no spoilers, I won't get into it, but Immaculate.
Right.
So she's in that, and that's been a roaring success for Sydney Sweeney. But she stays on everyone's lips and in everyone's minds because of a combination of things. She's intelligent enough. So not just talking about her attractiveness. She's intelligent enough to play up her looks. And she knows what creates a soundbite. You know, even these, she's come out and said about, you know, people looking at her and things like this. But then she's also, you know, starred on SNL and said, you know, if it wasn't for this, I'd just show my boobs and, you know, I'll be able to become a star as well. So I don't think she will be affected by casting agents that much. Not now anyway. I think she's managed to establish herself quite well.
Right. Well, we have a one chat I want to get to. Saverick says, thank you for the chat. The deconstructionist ideology is creating angry blacks and self-guilty whites through propaganda is but a tool for the real bad guys. The remaining population will be the permanent consuming class. And I think there's a big attempt to create wedges between people, but that brings us to something else I want to get your opinion on. Speaking of uglification of especially females in the media space, this has been an ongoing problem in video games as well. And I think it's interesting when you look at video games, because this is something where, you know, you can say when it comes to casting, oh, this person was just the most talented. This person was just, they were right for the part. When it comes to video game characters, you're actually, as artists, you're crafting them. You have total control over what they look like. People are choosing in the games industry to make video game characters who are female less attractive. I mean, we see this here, even like the same character across different games, Mary Jane, less attractive. Melanie Mack just did an entire video about how, you know, why are video game characters now, like, why is this the norm? Right. And well, I mean, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, so a really good example of something which has broken that mold would be Stellar Blade, Korean game. And it's so, so funny to see everyone just, not everyone, insane left-wing people, losing their mind that there is an attractive person as the playable character. People are like, it's just a sexualized doll. This isn't even a real person. It's literally modeled off a model. Right. The body is a body scan. It's a model. And they're like, that's not a real person. No, it is a real person. You're just fat and you're lazy and you don't make any effort with your life. And so you're a miserable individual who just denigrates anything that doesn't look as repugnant and repulsive as you. That is what it is. It's unhappy, sad, ugly people wanting the entire world to only be a representation of themselves. And that's what's happened in video games at the moment, because these weird, weird, weird video game consultant firms have sort of popped up everywhere. Sweet Baby Inc. being one of them. And they just do the same thing, you know, and that's what we've seen in video games lately. That's why you're seeing everything just being just gross to look at, basically, because of these people, generally speaking, probably angry feminists as well, I would imagine. So there you go. Yeah, Stellar Blade is the best example of it. It's the best example.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that it's also not Western, because the Asian, even if we're talking about anime, Asian films, definitely Asian games, they're not subject to the same ideological pressures that we see in the Western world. They're just not. And I think that's why, if we even look at, like, I don't want to say that, you know, Korean drama or Asian games are only now becoming popular. They've been popular for a long time, even in the West, but I think they're gaining popularity because there are a lot of audiences who are just looking at what's happening in Hollywood and they're thinking, no, thank you. Like, there actually are alternatives. It's been the usual that Western media has been the most popular, but it doesn't necessarily need to be that way. And I think Western studios are going to be feeling it. Like, hang on a second. Customers actually do have choices. They don't have to give us their money. If there are people who are telling regular stories with good-looking people, they're not trying to shame their audiences. Yeah, why wouldn't people be drawn to that instead of us?
Well, that's the interesting thing, I think, about the video game space, because it mirrors quite perfectly, actually, what's happened in movies for some time. So movies, we've seen it, this concerted push for DEI, the message, the agenda. And it's starting to come to a head now. You know, very slow, you know, it's been a slow walk there, but we've got there. We've got there now, starting to be rejected. The box office receipts tell us that. In video game industry, it's happened, and it's almost hit an immovable object, this brick wall, where the DEI is just not going to go any further. Because a video game costs to make and develop probably about the same as one of these big movies, you know, $100-200 million. And the gaming demographic is a large demographic, but it's smaller in terms of its scope. So movie demographic, quite large, appeals to everyone, relatively small investment from the audience, the consumer, be it $10, whatever, on a movie ticket. Video games, quite a large investment, $70, $100, you know, it's a lot of money. And it's a smaller demographic, and it's really kind of only one, you know, the majority of demographic is one type of person. It's a man, generally mm-hmm. speaking, majority of gamers are men. And they're a certain age range. And so you've started to get this push of DEI and ESG in video games to the worst demographic that consumes your product, who's going to buy into that. And now you're seeing these games just completely fail. Sweet Baby Inc. is a video games consultancy firm, a narrative consultancy firm that rose to prominence fairly recently. Because they worked on a game called Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. And it was just a joke from the start anyway. The whole game was a joke. And then... Oops. That's all right. And then these videos leaked from the game, and it showed... Kevin Conroy, who's an iconic voice actor for Batman, and sadly he's dead. And they murdered his Batman character in the game. And you're like, what is going on here? This weird, weird development. And so that then spawned Sweet Baby Inc. Detected, a Steam curator group, which then led to Sweet Baby Inc. just spurging out on Twitter, Kotaku writing hit piece articles to anyone that didn't like Sweet Baby Inc., and then PC Gamer, all these other companies just banding around to try to support this narrative consultancy firm who objectively were harassing people and trying to get people cancelled, all for going or just making a list of what games they worked on. That was it. They just made a list of what games they worked on. And it just led to this like insane outrage from these companies. But it's funny because, you know, what you're seeing is what I think in the video game space, what you're seeing is what we will eventually see in the movie space, but at a much quicker rate, I think.
And I think smaller. The video game space, it's also really interesting because there's a lot of similarities between what's going on in Hollywood, what's going on in the games industry. But I think in the games industry, more so than Hollywood, there are actual viable alternatives like AAA games. There are a lot of people who only play more indie games or even like the AA games. Whereas when we're looking at the big blockbusters, really it's only Hollywood. It's only a few studios that are putting them out. But I think there's a lot more hope in smaller game studios putting out good content than there is in Hollywood right now, people putting out different movies, which is too bad. But when we look at the Sweet Baby Inc. fiasco, what I find so hilarious is that the video games industry, I have never seen an industry, whether it's the actual game studios or, you know, the consultancy groups like Sweet Baby Inc. or even the journalists in that space, I've never seen an industry that so openly hates its customers. It's wild to me. It is wild to me. As someone who usually talks about movies and TV shows, the amount of vitriol that we have seen from some of these devs, like Twitter Twitter posts about how much they hate like the straight white male gamer, like you said, their core audience. It's insane. And I don't understand how they became so comfortable just voicing that. Not only is a lot of the stuff racist and misandrist, but just the fact that these people are your customers and you're bad mouthing them. If I were in the video games industry and customers were so upset with the work that I put out that they actually curated a list of projects I had been involved in to avoid, that would be cause for reflection. I would be like, wow, maybe I really need to evaluate. I need to step back, see what I'm doing wrong. Clearly, if my job is to make customers enjoy a product and it's backfiring so much, I'm not in the right business. But instead, they basically, in the video games industry, use this as an excuse to cry harassment. It's wild. Absolutely wild.
Yeah, I think that perfectly sort of is a great representation of society as a whole, how entitled we all are. Not all of us, obviously, but general society is very entitled, isn't it? Like, we demand everything. We just deserve it because reasons. So these people, they think that they can just create utter garbage and they deserve a job for it and good income and for you to buy it and shut up and just consume it. It's like, no, this is capitalism and this is what's happening. And this is part of it, right, is that when ideology crosses over with capitalism on that scale, it massively fails. And this is what we're seeing with the video game industry, because I don't think even they quite realize what they're doing, but they're just destroying themselves. Warner Brothers came out recently and was like, yeah, that game didn't do so well, actually. That's going to hit us for the rest of the year. It's like, so what did you learn from it, Warner Brothers? What did you learn? Did you learn anything? You know, because the consumer can hold out. We can hold on to our money,
right,
far longer than you can keep spending money without getting it back. So at a certain point, you've got to learn, because I don't have to give you my money, right? These game developers, they think that they're entitled to my money. No, you're not, mm-hmm, at all. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Jiggy Calzone says, progs always say they want to be noticed and recognized. Then look how they treat a helpful Steam group that points out which games they've worked on. Shaking my head. It's true. And in terms of the entitlement that they feel, I feel this always, it follows a pattern. It's not just they're trying to release this new game, new series, new concept that's super woke and super diverse. It's always they're attaching themselves onto something that used to exist and that has a built-in fan base. And so they know that it's a large project from the start, right? I mean, we saw this happen with, I mean, like the Suicide Squad game, with Spider-Man. It's always existing things that garnered a fan base, not because of the wokeness that they're trying to insert. So really, the entitlement toward an audience that they feel, it's based off a fan base that isn't there for them. They're there for something else. These people would be more than welcome, more than able to start their own, you know, their own comic series, their own video game series with a completely original IP, but they're not going to do that because, I mean, it's like that Tolkien quote, they evil cannot create, it can only destroy. And that's all they're good at. It's leeching onto things that already exist and just making them a little bit worse, if not much, much worse.
Yeah. Well, no, that is completely true. And it comes to the subversive element in media, be it gaming, movies, TV shows, whatever it is. It's that they want to co-opt something which is popular to drive a message through to their audience, so they can hopefully, I guess, eventually create content which is just what it is. But if they were asked to stand on their own two feet, a lot of these companies would just completely fall flat on their face. They wouldn't be able to. Games, comics, be it movies, whatever. No one's interested in it. No one wants those types of that type of content. Why? Because if they did, it would be popular by now. It's not, right. No one's interested in it. People have produced these things. They just don't become popular. The things which are popular then have to be subverted and co-opted, which is just, it's just gross. It's gross. Movies, generally speaking, movie studios, they have the belief that they've got the fans' money already. And they did actually for a while. So, you know, Star Wars, for instance, great example of it. They did have the fans' money for a while. But people aren't stupid, you know, they will slowly switch on and they will start to realize, and they have now, and people aren't buying it anymore. It's again, same with movies, same with video games, but just on a much, much quicker level, which is great to see. Really good to see.
And someone in the chat, they did point out that, you know, one of the reasons why video games, there's a lot, I think, louder audience and fan reaction is because a game costs a lot more than a C movie. So people who play video games, it's a much bigger investment for their hard-earned cash, which obviously it should be, than just even something like on streaming. You're technically already paying for a bunch of other things anyway. So I'm glad to see people voting with their wallets with
there's
that.
It's also a bigger investment on time. So a video
game,
you know, some of them are like 20 to 30 hours to complete. Whereas if I go to a movie, it's you know, it's $10 and it's done in 2 hours. Right. I can forget about that. Like I can forget about the money I've lost. Whereas a game, you can't really, because it's a big investment on cash and time.
Right. Free Gender says, I'm buying a PlayStation 5 just because the main character in Stellar Blade is attractive. And actually, so you're in the UK. We didn't have this in Canada, but now that I'm in the States, they have this thing called Movie Pass where I pay $20 a month and I can see basically as many movies as I want in the movie theater. It's like a subscription.
Okay, yeah, we have that here.
We didn't have that in Canada. So when I moved here, I was like, that's insane. Turns out there aren't a ton of movies I even want to see, frankly, nowadays. But still a cool thing. So I actually, speaking of the UK, I do want to get your take on the latest Scottish hate crime bill that's passed and caused a big ruckus. First, though, I do want to tell you guys about really exciting a new film that we have on Blaze TV. I know you guys may be tired of all the political nonsense nowadays. Well, this is not political. This is a straight up comedy. Agua Donkeys is what it's called. I would say the humor is very reminiscent of Arrested Development and kind of Napoleon Dynamite-y. So if that's your jam, you're going to love this. And if you subscribe at blazetv.com, there's also a ton of other great original content you can see, including another comedy that we have called The Reopening that launched last year. That's kind of a parodying all the craziness the pandemic brought around. So Agua Donkeys continues that tradition, telling the hilarious story of two optimistic pool boys chasing their dream girl. The world can be a pretty dark place, so why not take a step back and have a little laugh? So head on over to blazetv.com/aguadonkeys and subscribe for just $15. Let's stay connected, stay informed, and have some fun while we're at it. This is the trailer, which you can find on the Blaze TV YouTube channel. It's a lot of fun. It's a fun movie. And, you know, there just aren't that many good comedies nowadays. So it's really cool to see Blaze taking it up with Agua Donkeys. All right, so let's talk about J.K. Rowling and what's happening in Scotland. Scotland, I've not been, would love to visit. It looks beautiful. Laws are crazy. I'm sorry if you're watching, Scottish fans, friends, but I don't know what you folks are doing right now. So from what I understand, April 1st is when this new policy went into effect, that basically there are already sort of speech laws in the UK, but this just really clamps down on speech that might be considered as to rouse hatred towards specific groups, including on the basis of age, I think is one of the new categories, but also gender, religion, sexuality, you name it. And this doesn't just criminalize potentially with up to 7 years of prison public speech, but it even goes so far as to criminalize speech you might have in private in your own home, even something you might say to just a friend or a family member. So this is not just trying to police what's happening in the public sphere. This is just your thoughts that you express publicly, period. Pretty crazy stuff. So as someone in the UK, can you actually tell us a little bit more about what speech is like in places like England that's not Scotland, but still broadly the UK? Because I know speech restrictions, it's not new over there. Just like in Canada, we also still have speech restrictions.
Yeah, so in the UK, there are laws to control speech. But the laws themselves, they've been more and more implement, you know, sort of, we've seen them policed more and more lately, last few years, for instance, and only to serve and protect one sort of class of individual. They don't tend to protect the normal person, for instance, because you have sort of state sanctioned sort of sexism and racism towards white people and men, which is always fun. But they were manageable, you know, dumb and annoying, but manageable to a degree. the main thing in the UK is the sort of social contagion element of speech control. You know, people feeling like they can't just say what they want. That's been the main issue, I think, because a lot of these laws would just fall flat on their face if everyone just, you know, didn't abide by them, quite frankly. It wouldn't be able to work, which goes quite nicely off to the Scottish one, because it's kind of gone the other way, is that people haven't abided by them, but then everyone has also reported people. So the police were inundated with reports. So nearly 4,000 reports in one day. And what a fantastic day for it as well, because of April 1st. and, you know, you'd almost think that it was a troll at this point. But no, this is what Humza Useless wants to sort of bring in power. Someone who was never voted for either, important to note. Just, you know, didn't win an election to gain power, just was put in place. But yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. The speech is insane. I really appreciate what J.K. Rowling was doing on Twitter. Absolutely fantastic. Just being like, yeah, this is a man. This is a man. This is a man. This is an abuser. This is this. This is this. Arrest me. I'm coming back to Scotland tonight. Arrest me. I'd love to bring it. Absolutely bring it. They were like, not criminal. It's like, yeah, okay. But then we don't know if they've been reported as non-crime hate incidences, which is another scary thing the UK has. So right. If it's not, I don't know if you've heard about these, but if it doesn't break the law, it can still be recorded on a police report as a non-crime hate incident.
You which is basically no right. Just we have it on record that you've done or you've said something that we don't like. But the one good thing about Scotland is you guys over there, you like a bit of banter. So more complaints were made about First Minister Humza Yousaf and his 2020 speech about often being the only non-white person in the room than J.K. Rowling under new Scots hate crime law. So good on the people out there doing the Lord's work, reporting the man himself for breaking his own law. But I think it illustrates how ridiculous that is. The idea of trying to stir up hate against a specific group, obviously calls to violence, they're already illegal everywhere. No one approves of them. We know this. But when something is so broadly defined as hate, I think what we've seen already in the UK and in Canada is that often criticism is called hate. And in the case of J.K. Rowling, I have her absolutely mad lad Twitter thread here. This is just truth, what she is saying. She's essentially just pointing out that these trans individuals who call themselves women, they're not female, and yet they're still trying to, you know, gain access to women's spaces despite the fact that they're criminals. Good on J.K. Rowling. She's been trying to speak about this issue for years and years now, and for her trouble, she's been obviously called a TERF, and people have tried to boycott Harry Potter. Least successful boycott in the history of all boycotts, I have to say. But it's insane that this keeps, the speech restrictions, the idea that we cannot simply speak truth, that okay, a male is not the same as a female. And here she's like, specifically, she's not just trying to bully random trans people as some activists might try to paint the picture. These are criminals, right? All of them.
Yeah, genuinely awful people. And the fact that you can be criminalized in your own home as well. Like, the funny thing about the whole law and all of these laws, they're draconian. You know, people use the term 1984, you know, maybe a bit flippantly, but this is absolutely 1984, for goodness sake. And the law itself, it stipulates if it's likely to incite, right. If it's likely to, what? That you can't. That's not even a what? Where's the definition? Like, right. Where's the actual boundary? Because I could likely cause anything by doing anything at this stage. I mean, it's a possibility. Possibilities are endless when it comes to things like that. It has the potential to do this. Everything has the potential to do anything. I step outside my house, I have the potential that a pig's going to fall on my head and kill me. I mean, it's not a high potential, but there is a possibility there. I mean, it's just nonsense. It's absolute lunacy. It's crazy. Right.
It's also trying to legally make you culpable for the actions of someone else. So it's not even if you are clearly expressing hatred, it's that if you are likely to cause hatred to manifest in someone else based on their reaction to what you've posted, how am I supposed to know what their reaction is? I mean, based on that, I mean, personally, I think that a lot of these pride parades might qualify as hate speech under this law, because I think they are likely to inspire a lot of very negative feelings in people who are watching that and think, I don't know if this is actually good. I don't know if we should support this. So it's a very, I don't even want to say weak standard, because it's not really much of a standard at all.
This is what you're wrong, you know. It's that those laws are not there to protect the normal person, okay? That's so true. Pride, no, you just have to shut up and deal with it, okay? This is there to protect the protected class in our society. That's what it's actually for. And the thing about the laws, which is, and again, that we still have them in this country at the moment as well, it's tangentially affected. So it doesn't even have to be you. The receiver doesn't have to be the protected class. If the person reporting the crime can be offended on behalf of the protected class, it's utterly absurd. It is nonsense. It's ridiculous. When did we become such a weak society? Where I remember a term, you know, growing up, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me, right? When did we become such a weak society that someone says a naughty word and people go, oh, you've offended me? Just grow up, deal with it. Grow up and deal with it. And it comes down to this entitlement. People are so entitled that they feel they can walk through life, they have a right to walk through life and not be offended by anything. But, you know, sorry, but you're choosing to take offense to things. You choose to take offense. I can't choose to give offense. I can't demand you're going to take offense to something, right? I could call you a snowflake or a flower. One of those two things could offend you. I could call you, you know, a pretty harsh slur word. It might not affect you. It is what it is. I can't ensure that you're going to be offended by something. You choose to be offended by it, right? And this is, it comes down to society. It's the entitlement. Oh, I can't be insulted. I can't have this. I can't have this. You know, I must do this. It's just grow up, deal with it, right? Life sucks. You're never going to get rid of any of the, you know, the buttholes in society. There's always going to be a butthole. Always. No matter how many draconian measures are put in place, you make society better by just firming people up, making them a bit stronger.
Right. And I feel like instead of accepting that you're always going to be upset maybe by someone, but you should not let it get to you. And perhaps, you know what, if you are being picked on by everybody, maybe we have some introspection. What am I doing that is maybe potentially causing some of this? Not to victim blame, but, you know, we live in a society and sometimes these social cues, it's our way of getting everybody to kind of get along and meet one standard. No, these people have decided actually it's easier to basically take over entire governments and enact laws that protect their status to make sure that no one is able to hurt their feelings. And you also mentioned this is gonna be a law that will absolutely be applied very selectively. So for people who haven't yet seen this clip, I think this is what people were reporting Hamza Yousef for.
The Lord Justice Clerk, white. Every High Court judge, white.
Basically complaining Advocate, Scotland is white. Too white.
The Solicitor General, white. The Chief Constable, white. Every deputy chief constable, white. Every
it's
assistant
vitriol,
chief constable, white.
It.
Yeah,
the head
he's
of the
upset
Law Society,
about the white.
White. The head of the Faculty of Advocates, white. Every prison governor, white. And not just justice. The chief medical officer, white. The chief nursing officer, white. The chief veterinary officer, white. The chief social work advisor.
I mean, I can't imagine going to India or China and complaining that there's too many Indian or Chinese people, because like, where else would they be? Of course, they're, and that's okay. People are allowed to be the race that they are. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think this is what people were reporting Hamza Yousef for under the new hate speech law. But we know that the number of times this law will be used to actually silence someone who's like Hamza Yousef versus someone who's maybe like J.K. Rowling, it's not going to be balanced. It's not going to be balanced. And it'd be one thing if we were, as a society, say, hang on, we all need to get along. And, you're not allowed to stir up hatred against anybody. But we already know that that's not actually what this law is going to be.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, they've even, they have come out and said, they didn't break the law, that kind of makes sense because it's like retroactively applying it. But if he was to do the same speech today, they wouldn't care. They wouldn't care at all. And this is part and parcel of the UK at the moment. The UK is not a great place. It's really, really not. You know, be it all manner of things, the police are not there to police actual crime. They're there to police the native population for doing anything bad or to complain, even just to complain, to be like, look, you know, we don't enjoy the way society's going. Nah, can't do that anymore. Can't say that. Can't do this. Can't say that. It's very demoralizing. Being in the UK, you know, actually, you know, amongst it all, it is quite demoralizing because you nothing has been more apparent over the last, I don't know, I want to say maybe longer than 5 years, between the last 5 to 10 years, is a very, very, very notable decline of the UK. It's declining anyway, but the social fabric of the UK, huge decline. It's just, there are some places where you just shouldn't really go. Yeah, like it's, you know, not in terms of being, I mean, dangerous places, of course, but just because it looks like the third world. It just looks like the third world. It's gross. You know, it's just nasty.
I mean, that's sad to hear. Are there places in the UK where you think there is still a sense of Britishness, or you can walk around and it still looks like a British country? Because I know we were just briefly speaking about this before we went live. A few years ago, was in London, and it was, you know, I had been living in the UK when I was around 14, 15, and then I have a BNO passport because my dad's from Hong Kong. So as a teen, I would visit fairly frequently, but I hadn't been back for around, honestly, at that point, around 5 years. I was absolutely shocked how quickly it had changed. And I was saddened by that trip, feeling like, okay, well, you know, the London that I used to know from when I was like, is that just gone forever? And I can't imagine how I would feel if I was someone who was from London, actually born and raised there.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the Londoners don't live in London anymore. They've moved out. But yeah, London will never be the same again. It's like 46 or 47% of social housing in London is just to foreigners. Work that one out. Why? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. It's so aggravating. It's so, so irritating. You know, my tax money just goes towards funding utter nonsense these days. It's so, so incredibly frustrating. And we act like we're a superpower. We're not. As a country, we're hugely in debt. We need to start acting like it and saving some of the cash, sort of just splurging it out on everyone else. But yeah, to answer your question, there are some places in the UK which are still like the UK, like England. But you literally have to go to rural countrysides, you know, like a tiny little village with a parish, you know, like a little parish village type deal. But that's really it. Like I go to Bristol. Not that I would want to, but you know, if I go to Bristol, for instance, yeah, it's just like a mini London. I go to London, chance of getting stabbed up with a machete. You know, it's not a nice time. You know, that's why I live in the countryside. I like my country living. But yeah, the rest of it's not so good. London will never be the same. It will never, ever be the same again. And the thing is, you know, there is no end in sight, because you've got the likes of Reform UK. People are like, yeah, Reform UK. Don't vote for Reform UK. If you're, you know, in the UK watching now, don't vote for Reform UK. They're happy to accept Conservatives who have literally led this country into utter oblivion. Why are you giving them another chance? No, this needs to be like the Bud Light boycott, but for Conservatives. Destroy them. They need zero seats. Destroy them. And destroy Reform. Because if Reform and Richard Tice had any integrity, they wouldn't accept people who had led the country into utter oblivion. They just wouldn't. Also, furthermore, Richard Tice and Reform, and also by proxy Nigel Farage, keep bowing to communist propaganda, hope not hate. So no, you should never vote for Reform. Reform are awful because they are literally kowtowing to a communist just hate machine. Just no, don't. They don't deserve it. They don't deserve any votes.
Right. And I think when we look at what's happened in the UK, obviously, a lot of people say, well, left, they love open borders. What I think people might not understand from an outside American or Canadian perspective is that the Conservatives in name have controlled the UK for, what is it, 15 plus years this point. So there's not really a good excuse as to why this has happened. I know, you know, when the whole Brexit debate was going on, a lot of that was in regard to immigration. A lot of people wanted the UK to have more sovereignty when it came to their immigration. A lot of people were hoping that once Brexit was passed, all right, now we can control our own borders. That's great. That hasn't happened. So is there just no political willingness to say, hey, we are full, we can't keep taking in all of these people? Because it seems like the actual voters have made their stance very clear, but that's not reflected in policy.
Well, so they've made it very clear, actually, throughout history. So the reason why the Conservatives even got into power, and have been in power for the length of time that they have, is because each time, so when they were voted in initially, it was again on essentially on the promise that they would reduce immigration. Brexit only happened because people wanted control of the borders and wanted to stop free movement, and they wanted to lower immigration. Because, you know, people on the ground are well aware that the fabric of society is changing at an exponential rate, and a rate which has never been seen before in any country, actually. And it'll be the same in the States. It'll be the same in Canada as well. It's never happened before. It's quite literally a social experiment that is now failing. There is no political will because the Conservatives had an 80-seat majority. They could do whatever they wanted and they didn't do anything. They actually did nothing. Oh, no, wait. They did something far worse than nothing. They increased it. We had more people come in. Yeah. And the thing is, we don't build houses here. So, you know, people find it quite weird when we're talking about it in this level. The UK, space is a premium. Mm-hmm. So the average house costs somewhere in the region of like £260,000. A lot of money. Equate that into dollars wherever you're from. But the average salary is sub £30,000. Right. But then you've got bills and gas and electric. You've got council tax on top of it, which is thousands of pounds. Bills on top of thousands of pounds. People don't have any money at the end of, you know, to save to buy a house. And because we don't build them, but the demand keeps going up because there's, you know, there is no supply because we don't build them. But the demand is high because we keep importing everyone. The housing market's just crazy. It's just insane. And lenders don't lend money either. Like, it's really difficult to get a mortgage in the UK. That's not easy. That's very, very difficult to get one. And even if you do get one, the interest rates are near impossible to sort of keep up with for most people. You know, it's really, really difficult. And so I think, you know, to get down to it, I think what's happened is this really big key focus on GDP. It's just a nonsense number that is completely worthless. And when you boil it down, you have to compare it to per capita, because per capita, the UK is just in complete ruins, absolute ruins. You've got people here that will now stay here. They've never paid into the system and they will never pay into the system, and they will only ever take from the system because we have socialist sort of services in place, which we all pay for in the UK. And there are people that have never paid into it and are just taking, and that will be their existence. And you can actually, you know, in the UK, so They almost just, it's like burying your head in the sand. They don't want to admit it because they were taking note of certain demographics and things like this and what certain demographics did and whether they contributed or not. And now they've stopped doing that. And they've also, I believe they're stopping to show geographical locations on ethnicities. Because if you look at actually country of origin where people live in the UK, multiculturalism doesn't exist. They don't mix, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about diversity. Well, then why aren't people living actually in a diverse neighborhood? Why does everyone create enclaves? You know, diversity is our strength. No, it's not.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Callum specifically from the Lotus Eaters, if you're watching this, but he has his own channel. I think it used to be called Britannica Politica. I don't know if it's still called that, but essentially he's crazy. He'll go to Afghanistan. He's, you know, been on like front lines of actual war zones, documenting just, I guess, life in these different cultures, he decided to do a video about specifically the UK, which was really interesting. Mm-hmm. But he was going to all the places in the UK where some people might call them diverse, but there's actually no diversity. They are a majority foreign. So there are places in the UK where it's not, you know, just English with the underground signs and everything. No, they're actually in Hindi or Tamil or some language that I don't even recognize. And this is in the UK. There are places in the UK where they are. I mean, essentially, they're little pockets where the culture is completely non-British. And so it's not, like you said, it's not really multiculturalism. The claim I've heard people say, it's like, well, you know, we need immigrants because it's people aren't having kids here, and obviously the population is falling. If you talk to a lot of people who are native to the UK or Canada, or whatever, why they're not having kids, they will say it's because it's too expensive, because it costs too much to have a house. Cost of living is too high. You're not helping them by importing more people. I've spoken to friends my age who are still renting, who don't have hopes really of buying houses in the near future. They're mentality at the time was like, well, you know what, that's okay because we have a aging population. I'll just frankly wait until some of the older people die. Their houses will be up for grabs. Well, no, they won't, because we've already imported millions more people who are going to, you know, try to live there. So it's just, it's a real mess. And it's so sad to see the way that the political class have basically abandoned, especially the young people who are born in these countries. It's like their concerns, their future, their ability to have kids, they don't matter anymore.
Well, so it's interesting, isn't it, really? Because a lot of these things can be plotted down on a statistical level. And, you know, I'm going to say something which may be slightly controversial, but you're quite literally importing a parasitic class into the country. Mm-hmm. Genuinely, documented, well documented now, statistical basis, that certain demographics will never contribute. They are a net detriment to the country. And because of certain cultural reasons, they repopulate at quite an exponential rate because they don't use protection. So all you're doing,
and they have more kids and more kids younger, so the generational cycle is shorter.
Exactly. And so all you're doing is importing a parasitic class into the country, which will eventually overpopulate the original, you know, the ethnically British, for instance. And who's going to pay for it? Like in the end, because the majority won't be the British in the end, because they would have been outbred, if you're going to go down to those terminologies. And so the sort of forethought here is insane. There is no forethought. You're importing a class which just takes from the system, repopulates at an exponential rate. Where's the straw that's going to break the back? Like, eventually it's going to snap. The system doesn't work. It's not, all systems of that society will just fail at that point. And that's what we're living in. That is actually what we're living in right now. It's crazy.
And that's how countries like the UK and certainly like Canada, they will turn into third world countries, right? And I think a lot of people just assume that when you import a bunch of people into Canada and the UK, well, they'll just be British and they'll perform like the British do, and they'll live like the British do. We see that's not happening. And it's really sad, but that's the sense that I get when I go, especially if you've been to somewhere like Toronto. It's very, very similar to London. I think Toronto is a majority minority city. Most people in Toronto, or at least a plurality of them, were not born in Canada. You can't keep up the Canadian living standard if most people are not from here. That it just doesn't work like that. I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to countries like that for Canada and the UK, sadly.
No, there isn't. I mean, you'd have to have a radical far right movement, which would, you know, and it is radical. To change this, you would actually have to have a radical far right movement, which would deport people, just straight up, just deport everyone. Mm-hmm. But you can't do that. You would never be able to do that. It's never going to happen. So the country itself is quite literally just on a road to ruin. And I've been saying this before, you know, civilizational collapses. The Western world is on a level of, we're at a precipice of civilizational collapse. Both, you know, anywhere in the West, the UK, Canada, be it America, it's all on a precipice of civilizational collapse because of all of this stuff. You know, the UK is a very tiny island. We have a lot of people here, and there seems to be no end to the amount of people we're going to keep letting in. So mark my words, this will happen in Canada. It will be exactly the same in the States. The States are seeing it now at quite a rapid rate. And that will only change if, you know, the election goes a certain way. Yeah, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. It's very frustrating. It's really, really, really frustrating. Because the thing is, with anyone with any actual critical thought would have... critical thinking is a skill which is sorely lacking in the political class anywhere in the world, especially in the UK. We have a massive drive for net zero, and yet we're going to keep... We have no cap on immigrants. That doesn't make sense. It literally doesn't make sense. From any level, you can't have a drive for net zero and infinity immigrants at all times, be it illegal or legal. It can't happen. You can't have a plan to reach net zero at that point. On any level, be it work, you know, industrious, houses, any, it just doesn't make sense. And you can't also try to, that just goes down to everything. But yeah, I don't know. It's very, very frustrating. It makes me very, very sad. Very, very, very sad. The UK is a lost place now, and the ethnically British will be gone.
No, it is. And I will get into bouts of melancholy when I think about this issue for too long, because it's almost not just the impending sense of what's to come, but also what was lost. And like you said, I don't, it's not something like a light switch you can just turn on and off, right? The way that the countries used to be, it's not going to be something that comes back. And I think, you know, if I look at countries like Hungary, especially the Eastern European countries, I am hoping against hope that they're watching what's happening here, and they're taking notes and saying, no, we will ensure that this does not happen to us. I'm going to be going to Budapest for the first time in August. Very excited to see it. But, I've heard a lot of their policies are trying to get up their birth rates. I think 4 kids and you don't have to pay any income tax, which is an amazing policy. But it's something that we could even try it in the UK and Canada, the US. I think it's too late at this point. Not that we shouldn't, sorry?
You wouldn't be able to do that now, right? Because the people that they're trying to encourage to have kids are the ones paying their taxes. The ones who don't pay the tax, who have all the kids, don't pay any bloody tax. So you, the government wouldn't be able to cut taxes from the people that are funding the people that they imported. So you just can't do it. This needed to be done 20 years ago. That sort of policy needed to be done and implemented 20 years ago. You just can't do it, because we've got to keep the grift up for the people that just take from society. And that is what it is. It is a parasitic class. Again, strong words, but it is the truth. An actual parasite class.
Right. And it's funny because they were pretty smart about that. The left, the open borders advocates, it used to be that, we need the migrants for like economic reasons. But I mean, you look at the way things are being done, there would be ways to ensure that people who came would be economic contributors, right? You could have minimum income requirements. You could have minimum degree requirements. You could do that. They're not doing that. I mean, it seems like the only barrier or the only, I guess, way that minimum immigration is being capped in some way is just literally the bureaucrats not being able to stamp them in fast enough to keep up with demand. That's the only thing right now that is acting as some sort of quell of the tides of people that are coming in. But all right, before we finish off, I don't want to end on too dour a note. What are the best things you think people should be watching right now?
Oh, right. Shogun is the best thing on TV. It is beautifully made. It is authentic. It is technically superior and superb to most things which are out there. You do have to read subtitles, but that's the authenticity behind it as well. Right. Listening to everything in Japanese. An authentic period, feudal Japanese dialect. So Shogun is great. It's absolutely brilliant. Hiroyuki Sanada, if you don't know anything about Hiroyuki Sanada, great actor, needs to be in more things, absolutely superb. It's literally just that. House of the Dragon will be coming back. I really enjoyed season one, so I'm looking forward to season two. I think it will be good. We don't know, but I think it will be. That's it. Like, that's literally it. I don't have anything else that I sort of enjoy watching at this stage. It's Shogun, and hopefully House of the Dragon when it comes back.
I don't know if you get this, but I'll often get people on my videos when I do pop culture, like review stuff, saying, you just hate everything. Why don't you talk about stuff that you like more? It's like, what? What? I have reruns of The Office. Like, what else? What's good that I'm missing?
I could rewatch Breaking Bad, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some good stuff out there. There are some good movies out there. There has been some good movies that are worth a watch. And there will be some good movies coming out this weekend. I think Monkey Man will be very, very good. With Dev Patel as a directorial debut, I think. The First Omen looks reasonably okay. That'll be interesting to see how that goes. And I will say I recommend Land of Bad. The director, his name is William Eubank. He directed a film called Underwater a few years ago. So you probably recognize that.
I was really surprised by that film. I wasn't expecting to like, it was like a January release or something like that. Kristen Stewart. I was like, whatever. I thought it was actually all right.
It is a great film. And William Eubank's a really solid bloke. I would consider him a friend. He's a really nice guy. So he directed this film called Land of Bad. Kind of a bit of a throwback film, you know, sort of macho masculine type film. But really, really good. Got Russell Crowe in it. And anyone who's sort of hiring Russell Crowe still to this day, you know that, you know, they're not indulging all of the sort of nonsense. So I'd recommend that. And then hopefully, I'm trying to think what else is coming. Monkey Man should be good, but that's out this weekend. But don't watch Immaculate. It's not a very good film.
It's too bad. That's one I hadn't seen yet, but I was hoping it would be good. Omega Resetsu says House of the Dragon is only good because George R. R. Martin is involved. Have you seen The Three Body Problem?
No, I've heard good stuff about it. Well, good and mixed, actually. I have not had time for that just yet. Have you seen it or not?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I mean, I was planning on watching it because just I'm not actually familiar with the source material, but obviously Dave and Dan. So I wanted to review it for that purpose, but I haven't gotten the chance to. But I've heard fairly good things about it. So
I've heard mixed to positive, primarily. So that'll be interesting. And one of the good things I think everyone should hate watch. Not everyone, actually. Not everyone should hate watch it. But The Acolyte, Star Wars, The Acolyte, that'd be quite fun.
Yes, I'm definitely looking forward to Acolyte. We've also got Velma Season 2 coming out April 25th.
Goodness me.
It's going to be terrible, but as a content creator, you look at a show like that and you're like,
Yeah. As an exercise in wasting money, but putting money in my pocket. So I'm happy
exactly.
about that.
Exactly. And hopefully Amazon's Fallout will be good.
I don't know. We'll see. I've heard mixed things about that. The director did come out and say something about, like, you know, I didn't set out to please the fans. I'm like, why? You should. That's the fundamental basics that you should try to do on any adaptation.
Yeah.
Please the people, like your core audience. But I don't know, who knows? Alien Romulus, that does actually look good. I've heard very good things about that from people that have
seen. What's the release date on that?
August sometime, mid-August. But that does actually look good. Sources that, you know, watch movies at test screenings and stuff. Test screening audience was very, very positive for that film, which doesn't necessarily mean a lot, not all the time. But this one I'm more inclined to believe, but just based on how the trailer's come across and everything that the director has come out and said, and it looks quite smart. You know, there's a lot of hidden bits and pieces which are good homages to past things. I could be wrong and I could be eating my words in a couple months, but I'm looking forward to it.
Right. I know that's something that I'm definitely gonna check out too, even if it's not gonna be good. I'm too invested in the franchise as a whole to miss one out. Echo Base Network says, great guest today, Lauren. Quick thoughts from both of you on Grace Randolph as an entertainment movie/TV reviewer, LOL. I just feel like she's useful for getting the establishment access media perspective of things. Like, I'm not going to go to her wondering, should I watch this? Is this good? But it's useful to know, okay, this is what, like, industry insiders and their kind of like satellites are at least supposed to think and say. So that's how I view her. How about you?
Oh, I think she's incredibly stupid. I hate her. I think she's the definition of stupid. Like, stupid, and there's just a little picture of her in a dictionary. Where I have a segment of, like, you know, what stupid thing did Gray say this week? Because she's just a gold mine of stupid takes. She quite literally thought that Super Mario movie wouldn't last to the next week of its release. Weeks, months later, it's like across $1 billion. This woman is, yeah, not smart by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. Savrick says, I declare bankruptcy. Okay, I appreciate that reference. It's The Office. Yeah, one of the shows that I continuously am always rewatching. But Nate, it's been so much fun speaking with you. Your links are in below the description, but where can people find you best to keep up with your videos, what you've been doing, all your projects?
Yeah, so you can follow me at Mistakes Reviews on YouTube, and please do Twitter. Like, I'm pretty big on Twitter now. I like tweeting quite a lot. So Twitter and Instagram at Mistakes Reviews. But yeah, so YouTube's terrible for notifications. Anyone in the audience should follow anyone that they like, you know, on YouTube, on their Twitters, because YouTube doesn't send notifications out, but you can get good notifications on Twitter, generally speaking. So yeah, it's a good thing to do.
All right. Yeah, that is good advice, especially since people don't click through to their subscription tabs anymore on YouTube. People only go what's on the homepage, but YouTube is, it's entirely YouTube's discretion what they're going to serve you up there. So if you actually like someone, want to see their videos, follow them other places, turn on notifications, all the good stuff. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. Again, thank you to Nate for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Take care.